G'day, I'm Linda Ross and welcome to the Garden Clinic Digs Deeper podcast. Today, it's all about growing tomatoes, pretty much my favourite topic of conversation. I've been known to, at parties, talk about tomatoes for hours. Obviously, for people who are only interested, but for the others who are not interested in growing tomatoes, probably incredibly boring. But hopefully today you're interested in growing tomatoes, and so you will gain a huge amount of experience from my mistakes, failures, and successes over the last decade. So it's wonderful to have your company with me. We're talking tomatoes here on the Garden Clinic Digs Deeper podcast with Linda Ross.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graham Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, Sea Sol your plants.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.
What better place to talk about tomatoes than in my actual kitchen garden? So please excuse the birds, the bees, the chickens, the odd plane overhead, and my puppy dog Pearl, the blue merle, Australian Shepherd. I'm in the veggie patch and it seems such a wonderful place to be and to get started with the whole concept of growing summer's most celebrated crop, the tomato. No summer is quite complete without it. I just absolutely love the plethora of different colours and flavours and different sweetnesses too of tomatoes. Mine are all looking pretty good, and this year I'm been pretty impressed actually. We've all managed to get them in early, do all that soil preparation and get them in and growing, which means I'll have tomatoes probably before Christmas, which is excellent. Some years we're not as organised, I have to say, but this year we seem to be six cylinders powering ahead, and the structures are up. And we have wonderful rotational beds, and there's beds that are full of climbing beans that are coming up, the lovely netting. I've got teepees of snow peas that my 6-year-old son grew, patches of spinach and patches of borlotti beans this year, that lovely red main sorrel as well. And then in the leafy green bed, we've got spinach, kale left over, which is doing wonderful, and again more cucumbers growing up that side of the netting. We've got lots and lots of spring onions and different types of lettuces, getting all those lettuce in spring, of course, before it gets too hot. And this spring, hasn't it been just wonderful? It's been such a beautiful wet spring, cool temperatures, and really just sort of shower after shower after shower, really bedding in everything. And I feel like the earth is sighing with relief after such an extended dry period. And then we get into the flowering and fruiting veggie beds, which are full and brimming with zucchini, actually already starting, can't believe that, three different types of zucchini. What have we got over here? We've got the yellow, little yellow one called Gold Rush. And we've got the black, Blackjack. And then I really like that pale green one, the Lebanese one. It's my favourite. So a few of those, not too many because they really do grow too big. And the basil's looking pretty good, although I can see some caterpillar dropping. So I'm just trying to find that little caterpillar. Where are you? Naughty. And the tomatoes, here we come. So I'm walking through what is basically an arbor made of just bamboo canes that we picked, have strung up some bamboo across the top and then put some netting along, and we're growing up the tomatoes up the netting. We've used wire netting for these ones, and all these tomatoes are the climbing varieties. So let's go through the soil preparation first. What's wrong? Are you laying an egg? So soil prep. It's really important when you've got a veggie patch to be able to improve the soil with your own compost. I suppose that's number one. And we started this whole podcast journey with compost that was in Ep 1. And we were saying just the benefit of the compost heap here. We've been here for about 30 years and the compost, in fact, all the compost we make pretty much just goes into the kitchen garden beds, honestly. It's just such great stuff. And all the prunings and leaves and lawn clippings, you know, everything goes into that compost, all the kitchen scraps and everything, everything's recycled in there. And then after a few months, it's pulled out and it's enriched. So that's what we start with. And then that gets enriched further because, as you know, tomatoes are incredibly productive vegetables, and they're also climbing vegetables mainly. So it's really important to get those frameworks up. Now, when I add things to the soil, let's think of it as a square meter of soil. I always add half a bag of cow manure. I know, it's a lot, isn't it? And a handful of blood and bone, or two. I also put a handful of potash, potassium sulfate, which really helps tomatoes crop better, flower better, and crop better, and the taste better too. The potassium sulfate is one of those trace elements that really helps the flavour of your tomatoes. Also, I add the most important, I feel, ingredient sometimes is dolomite. Because what happens sometimes with your tomatoes, when have you ever seen a tomato with a little soggy bottom or a rotted bottom? That's called blossom end rot, and it's about a calcium deficiency in the soil. So I always add dolomite to the soil before I plant my tomatoes, and that prevents blossom end rot from even occurring in the life of that tomato. So that's really important as well. Sometimes I do honestly put some dynamic lifter in as well. I feel that all of this nutrient goes in, it becomes available to the tomatoes. What's up there? What kind of bird is that? They're all having a fight. Oh, well, so there, that's right. So all of that gets put into the garden beds, turned over, and I normally wait 2 weeks before I plant any of my seedling tomatoes. Back in the day, tomato lovers would always grow from seed because you've got the best variety of cultivars. And usually the greatest variety of heirlooms, you'd have to only grow from seed. But these days, actually, it's really changed. I was walking through Bunnings the other day, and even Bunnings has an array of heirloom tomatoes from diggers. And so it's really great that those sorts of heirloom varieties are now available for gardeners, and we don't have to grow everything from seed if we feel, you know, if we're getting a little bit too short of time. So if you want to just go and buy a good sized seedling from your local nursery for $5 or $6, go right ahead. It's certainly easy. But if you want to grow for your own seeds, of course, you've got to start in July. And I normally start inside. It takes at least 12 weeks to grow a good seedling ready for planting from seed. So you've got to be quite prepared. Anyway, it's springtime now and the tomatoes are really needing to go in. So let's go and have a look at the different types of tomatoes, shall we? Because honestly, there's really two groups. I like to just call them the climbing varieties, which will grow 2 metres, that's taller than me, by a long shot, 6 foot. And then there's the bush varieties, which I call the bush ones. They're also known as determinate and indeterminate, but I find that quite confusing, so let's just call them bush. And the bush ones are bushy, they just really grow on one stake. They're quite short, 1 metre, and they usually flower and fruit all at once. Can you imagine? All at once. So really what I think the bush ones are good for are passatas, relishes and chutneys, where you're going to make a bulk, you know, a day in the kitchen, and you're going to need a whole lot of tomatoes at one time. So that's sort of what I use there. The climbing tomatoes really do crop over a 3-month period. So they're great for salads and, you know, fresh tomatoes that you would use just gradually over the summer period. So once you've done the soil preparation, all those little ingredients have to go in, and you're planting out your tomatoes, make sure that you don't plant them too close together. We all do that. I've done it for years, plant them too close together. When they're little seedlings, they look so lonely, so far apart, but really and honestly, they need at least 1 to 1.5 metres apart because they just get so big. You'll find your climbing tomatoes will get 2 metres high and 2 metres wide. That's 6 foot by 6 foot. When I put them in, I make sure that the structure in which they're going to grow on is already in, and that means I'm not damaging the root ball when I'm pressing my bamboo stakes through. So I always make my frameworks out of bamboo because it's a sustainable material. I can actually harvest it from my own garden. I can just twine and wrap it up, and then I can put the lightweight wire mesh on, which I can reuse year after year, or some of the string netting that is now becoming available. The other thing I do at this point is really have a little clump of comfrey. Comfrey officinalis is a really great medicinal herb, an ancient medicinal herb that used to be used as, well, and sometimes still is, as a poultice to heal cuts and bruises and gashes. Back in the medieval times, it was used to knit bones together, like Mud and Pomfrey in Harry Potter. But yeah, so it's always good because the leaves actually have a really high proponent of potassium, which I find is excellent if you make a comfrey tea a little bit later in the season. And then you water that comfrey tea on your tomatoes. So I always make sure I have a big clump of comfrey. It is an escapee, so it kind of either needs a pot or somewhere it's not going to grow too big, like in the section of the garden where it's not going to kind of escape. I always like just putting it near the compost heap too. And then I can slash those comfrey leaves mid-season and throw them in the compost heap, enriching the compost that way. Otherwise, I just have a bucket of water with a lid because it stinks, and I put the comfrey leaves in there mid-spring, late spring. I pour, fill it up with water, sort of a third of a bucket of leaves, then fill it up with water, let it brew for 3 weeks, and then I sort of just cup out the liquid and use that for the tomatoes as they're starting to flower. It's one of the most fabulous homegrown fertilizers you can make, and particularly excellent for tomatoes and strawberries. It really brings out the flavour in your fruit, and it really doubles the size of your fruit too. I think I really can't say how much I love doing the comfrey tea fertiliser thing. It's brilliant. While the tomatoes are starting to grow, and honestly, once you've planted your tomatoes, you can plant them quite low, which means tomatoes will root all the way up the stem. So if you want to drought-proof your tomatoes, and even though we've had this wonderful drenching rain now, we are still looking at El Nino forecasts in the future, and it sounds like it is going to get hot and dry for summer. So we really want to make sure our tomatoes now are drought-protected, and so planting them deeper is actually a really great way of creating more roots. More roots means they're more anchored. More anchored means, of course, they can withstand being dry for a bit longer. And that means you can go for a holiday and they won't die by the time you get back. And then the other thing I always do is I put in a pipe for each tomato. Each tomato gets a pipe. The pipes are about 50 centimetres long and they're PVC pipe. You can put ag line in as well. And they've got little holes all the way through it, so they're permeable. And then I dig those pipes in so they're depositing water about 50 to 60 centimetres below the surface of the soil directly under the tomato. So what that does is then I just, you know, fill those pipes up with water. That water slowly ekes out down below the tomato and the roots actually go in search of that water. They're really clever. And sometimes when you're pulling out tomatoes at the end of the season, you'll notice that tomato roots can get to a metre long. They're really adventitious. So the tomato roots will grow and grow down, down, down in search of that water. The longer the tomato roots, the better anchored they are, but also the more drought-proof they are, because you can go away for a week and they won't die. You can just fill that tomato pipe up with water, and that water is depositing the water. The pipe's depositing the water where the plant needs the water to be, and then you're using the water roots down there, and then the top feeder roots are just at the surface of the soil, and then you can just feed the feeder roots, and that's really how tomatoes like to grow. When you're growing tomatoes, I just really use a figure of eight twine and I just hook them up like that. Being busy, I just do it each weekend. I just go in, take little lengths of twine and tie the tomatoes up once a week. Other people who grow tomatoes on string can just wind the tomatoes around the string as they go. It's a very simple technique. And really, now I'm growing the tomatoes with the very lightweight metal mesh. It's like that fencing mesh. The tomatoes are sort of weaving themselves in and out of that mesh themselves, which is quite great. When you're growing tomatoes, the climbing ones particularly, remember that they get really top heavy in the middle of the season. And if you're anywhere with high winds, you really need to make sure your tomato framework is bedded in with anchoring points. And I feel like the best anchoring points are honestly just star pickets at the ends, and just whack those star pickets in and sort of tether your bamboo frame to the star pickets so the whole structure has that integrity and everything's not going to go over when the winds come late summer and early autumn when your tomatoes are in peak fruit. So the tomatoes are in, let's say, and they're growing well. I don't think you need to feed them at that point. You can give them weak solution of seaweed, but that's it. The tomatoes will put all that energy into growing great thick stems, lustrous new foliage, and beautiful big branches. The branches then can get woven through the framework. And at this point, for the next few weeks, I actually pick off, and I'm just about to do that now, I'm just pick off all of the yellow, little yellow flowers. Because I don't want those flowers to flower and make fruit too early. Why? Well, of course, I want those, all the energy. Oh, here we are. This is a little flower. I'm just picking them off with my thumb and forefinger. It's pretty easy. Any more? Oh, some of these stems are so thick. It's amazing. Honestly, they are so thick. And the other thing, when they're so thick like that, you might have to thin the actual leaves out because the plants are just too thick. They don't need all that leaf. And the other thing I do too is I take all of the leaves off the bare trunks. So I grow bare trunks. I don't put too many leaves at the bottom. Make sure that there's no leaves for the bottom 30 centimetres. Take all those leaves off. The plant doesn't need them. So as the plant grows, the tomato grows, you can just slowly remove the lower leaves because you don't want to get any splash from watering onto those lower leaves because, honestly, those lower leaves just start to get all sorts of fungal diseases from that splash. All right, so as they're growing, you're winding them in. They're winding up in through the framework so they're getting supported, which is wonderful. I'm going to tie you in here. That's great. So we're picking off the flowers, and then what we're going to do is start switching over to a fruit fertilizer, something like the Comfrey fertilizer that you might have already made, or Harvest fertilizer, that fantastic liquid fertilizer that's excellent for fruit production. Okay, so mulching. The soil is so wet and beautiful. It really is. I'm just looking at it. I've never seen it so healthy. So we want to lock in all that moisture from the rain, and we want to lock it in with some sugarcane mulch or some loosened mulch or something like that. And what you want to do, you can mulch right up to the stem with tomatoes. They don't mind. And if you look at those stem, you can see actually sort of aerial roots coming out of the stem. So just mulch right up against the stem, and that will keep the weeds down for you. And then once the plant's about a metre, you can alternate. One week you can give it some seaweed. The next week you can give it some Comfrey or some Harvest. It's really nice to do some companion planting around your tomatoes. So you don't really have to have like a bed of tomatoes, all just tomatoes. Sometimes it's nice to integrate, you know, a few other little plants in there as well, because tomatoes do get a few little problems. We all know about that. And it's good to actually prevent those problems from happening. So we can use some companion planting. I like to use marigolds, chives, and I love basil everywhere too, because basil is such a great, companion flavour-wise, isn't it? But also it's good for whitefly in the garden as well. And honestly, that's about it for the tomatoes. Caring for your tomatoes. Marigolds is excellent, as I said. Oh, nasturtiums are beautiful too, but they tend to go a little bit wild, don't they? Nasturtiums. They can grow pretty great underneath your tomatoes, and they are very good for sort of warding away whitefly and aphids. because they've got such big flowers, they can also, you know, attract bees. I do find that lavender and blue flowering plants attract bees better. And bees don't really pollinate the flowers of the tomatoes anyway. Tomatoes are actually wind pollinated, which is sort of why they grow so well in polytunnels, you know, in the northern hemisphere where the summers are so short you can't grow tomatoes outdoors. But in Sydney, of course, in Australia, we can grow tomatoes for really about 6 months of the year. And honestly, I have sat in my friend Mickey's garden in June, still eating and picking off cherry tomatoes from the tomatoes growing in her garden at Camden, would you believe, in June. So, yeah. Basil, as I said, borage is a really good one because the blue flowers are excellent bee attractants, which is good for all the other fruiting veggies in your garden, maybe like the eggplant. I always love the long purple eggplant. Most of my shrubs of long purple eggplant, you know, that nice long thin one, I'll get about 50 fruit per plant. So it's quite a big producer. I'm also in that fruiting garden bed with all the fruiting tomatoes and eggplant. I'm doing a purple tomatillo this year. I think much more appropriate to our climate, the tomatillos. I think originally came from Mexico and they make that lovely green salsa. It's a really wonderful vegetable to grow. And sometimes I think we get so locked into a sort of English way of doing things that we forget about all of these other really amazing vegetables that come from other parts of the world, like the tomatillo and the Cape Gooseberry. It's another really great one. Anyway, so yeah, put those few companion plants in. Now, let's look at the next hurdle. Growing tomatoes, probably the biggest hurdle of all. It really is fruit fly. Some year with fruit fly, you'll just have this great year and there'll be no fruit fly and you won't have one single little larvae and it'll all be great and you'll wonder what on earth, you've just won the lotto. Other years, every single fruit will be laden with larvae and little wriggling things and no one will want to eat your tomatoes and all this effort and time that you've spent growing this tomato will be in vain because no one will eat them because they're all moving. So it's really important, I think, to firstly keep your plants super healthy, as we've just mentioned, well watered, well fed, and the companion plants around. Honestly, I think the easiest thing is fruit fly are actually now becoming active all year round. The Queensland fruit fly coming from Queensland now, I reckon, is pretty much in Sydney pretty much 365 days of the year. So the sort of old adage of, you know, fruit fly only being active in the summer months, yes, that's correct, and late summer most definitely, but because of the winter flowering locust tree, winter fruiting locust tree, fruit fly are becoming earlier and earlier every year. Fruit fly traps, the lure and the serra trap, particularly the Eco-Natura lure trap that you hang with the female pheromone in, really means it's just an indicator. So if you hang one up, not a thousand, but just one, near the garden, it lures the male fruit fly in, and so you'll know that you've got male fruit fly from just looking in the little tin in the tree. So really, it's not a control because it's just sort of indicating that, yes, fruit fly are around. Personally, I like to just either net all the tomatoes, so they're growing in a nice big net. Honestly, I just sometimes just go to Spotlight to get a mozzie net and use that mozzie net as draping over on my bamboo frame, and then all the tomatoes are in that sort of cage, like a mozzie net cage. And it's easy because, as I said, tomatoes are wind pollinated, not bee pollinated, so you're not going to ruin it. And the other thing I like to do sometimes is buy those fruit exclusion bags from Green Patch and Green Harvest. And they're little sort of mesh exclusion bags that you can use time and time again. And so as the truss is coming, you just put the exclusion bag over the top, tie it up. So yeah, some plants will have, you know, 60 exclusion bags on them. But at least that you know that the truss is developing inside that bag without getting stung by fruit fly. And you know that once that, and it's really great because it protects them from birds as well. And you know that once the tomato is nice and ripe, you can just pick them, you know that they're completely free and your kids won't freak out when their tomatoes are wriggling. And it's a really great, slightly time intensive, yes, but it's a really great way of knowing that all your tomatoes will come. So yes, you can either net the whole bush, you can net the whole bed, or you can exclusive net the actual truss. So that depends on sort of what you want to do. But guaranteeing them is, I suppose, the best idea, that you won't have that fruit fly problem. But as I said, sometimes you'll go a year and there'll be no fruit fly at all. It'll be terrific. Now, the other traps have to be replenished each week. There's little fruit fly traps that you can put in a plastic bottle and cut some holes, and then just put water, a spoonful of Vegemite and some detergent. And the fruit flies are actually attracted to the yeast, and they fly down the trap and then they drown, and you'll have to refresh the traps a few times. So that's an option. And there are commercially available traps too, but you have to spray them and it becomes a little bit annoying that way. All right, so what other things can we do to prevent tomatoes? The blossom end rot, well, you know, can be completely and utterly prevented by adding the dolomite prior to planting, or garden lime, but I prefer dolomite. And then we get to the problem of to prune or not to prune. So do we prune all the little leaf axils out, or do you allow yours just to go absolutely crazy? Well, my philosophy is the more stems, the more branches, the more fruit. And I just let them go completely and utterly crazy. I think in England, they always went in polytunnels, and they started off with a central leader that grows upwards along in the polytunnels. And then all the side branches are removed. And then so this tomato just looks long and skinny, like this one stem all the way up and usually arched over around the polytunnel. And that's sort of how professional tomato growers use them, because they're kind of scrambling, climbing plants, really. But I don't think you should be bothered with pruning. Save that time that you would use to prune and thin by protecting it from the fruit fly, which I think is more of a problem. It's shaggy also because Australia is so hot, much, much, much hotter than the UK, 45 degrees. I think those extra leaves will actually really help shade the tomatoes. And that's the other little thing that I was going to mention. If your veggie patch has a good lot of sun, which, you know, it should have at least five hours of sun a day to get the good fruit production, I often find that the western side will be obviously the hotter with the setting sun, and the fruit will be burnt on the western side of your tomato plants. So I always try to rig up a structure like a teepee trellis or some kind of framework to grow climbing peas on the western side of my tomato beds, because this will protect the tomatoes. They'll be in the lee side of the bean trellis, and climbing beans just seem to stand up to that heat more than tomatoes. And the last thing you want when you're growing tomatoes, you know, is to come home and it's 48 degrees and the tomatoes that you have been so kind and mollycoddled for 4 months have all scorched on that western side. So yeah, leaving the leaves on is a great way of protecting the fruit, and growing your beans, the climbing beans, on the western side of those tomatoes is also a really great way of protecting them. Yeah, don't bother about pruning. And if you want to prune a little bit, well, make sure that you're using the prunings as new cuttings. As I mentioned before, just snipping off that little bit, 10 centimetres, plopping them in, removing the lower leaves, you'll get another generation of tomato with those prunings. So that's awesome. And then you can just enjoy the tomatoes, the salads that you'll make, and chutneys and so forth. I've got some special tomatoes, particularly my hillbilly tomato that was given to me by Peter Gilmore from Key Nursery, and it's an heirloom tomato. So heirloom tomatoes, I just find them so much more interesting because of the colours and the flavours, and you can also save the seed. So at the end of the season, April, May, maybe May, June, the last of the hillbilly tomatoes I'll scoop out and I'll put in a jar of water, and I'll let soak in there for a couple of nights. And that actually creates a little fungus that protects them from fungal problems later in their lives, which is really interesting. And then I pour out all the flesh and the water, and then in a sieve, and then collect all those little seeds. And what I do then is just put the seeds out on some baking paper and dry them. And then, honestly, I just pop them back into the seed packet. And I collected like 500 seeds last year. It was amazing. Absolutely too much more than I could ever want myself. So I actually last year grew like 300 hillbilly plants and gave them away to garden clinic members and friends and so forth. So I had these wonderful sort of hillbilly tomatoes, which are a peach oxheart tomato. When you cut it open, it's got a wonderful star inside, and they're a low acid tomato with great flavor. So yeah, you can plan for seed saving by saving the seed from those heirloom varieties that produce true to type, so the seeds are exactly the same as the parent. The hybrid tomatoes, the ones that are not heirloom, they will not breed true to type, so they're not really worth saving the seed. But definitely if you're growing heirloom tomatoes, why not? You're saving yourself a lot of money, and you can just pop them into the same little seed packet and you can have them for pretty much your whole life. So yes, there we go. It's very, very easy. Storing them in the dark with some in a seed packet is all I need to do. Now, one thing that I do remember Mickey telling me that she did was getting a bucket of soil with a lid, and just those last few heirloom tomatoes at the end of the season, just sort of putting a tomato into the soil with the lid on top so it's in darkness, and then labeling the bucket with what type of tomato it was, like Tommy Toe or whatever, and then leaving it all year until until springtime, and then bringing out the bucket, opening it up, and when it's early spring, take off the lid and then bring it into a position where it's nice and warm and light. And then in a day or so, the seedlings emerge from those tomatoes that you've already buried, like the fruit. It's quite amazing. And then all you have to do is that you've got hundreds of little baby tomato seedlings, and then you can just prick them out and then plant them directly. So that's another really easy and quite magical way of storing the last of the tomatoes and storing the seeds. So I hope I've given you some wonderful information to get you started in the tomato patch this year. Now is certainly the time to get into it and to start, you know, growing an array of tomato seedlings. You can go to the Garden Clinic website for more information on growing tomatoes. And we also have some really great tomato recipes on the website as well. So that's gardenclinic.com. So I hope you've enjoyed this podcast on growing tomatoes. I would love you to share your tomato harvests with me on the Garden Clinic Facebook page. Would be totally awesome. And I look forward to talking to you soon. Have a great spring. It's a wonderful time of year. The rain has been so beautiful. We're really, truly blessed. And I look forward to chatting with you soon. Ciao for now. Have a wonderful day in the garden and go safely. You're listening to Linda Ross with her Growing Tomato Workshop podcast.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graham Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, Sea Sol your plants.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.